Bible study. At that time, Judy Zimmerman was the teacher. And she used, hopefully when this will come up. She used this video series called Clash of Kingdoms, presented by Ray Vanderlyn, as the basis of the study. I was very impressed with this study. A little while later, I was scheduled to speak on a Sunday evening, but I couldn't take my turn because I had to be away to attend the funeral of Dan Garrett's mother in Abilene. So I suggested that lesson 4 be shown in my place. That lesson is on the Philippian jailer, which is also the focus of our lesson this morning, as indicated by the text that were read by Brian and Barbara. So naturally, Sarge thought of me when he chose a speaker this morning. Now, I'm going to show a fairly lengthy clip, hopefully. I don't know if this is going to work. Steve, is it going to work? It's going to be fairly lengthy, but it's going to provide us with a background so that you can understand and visualize this story better. In these videos, Mr. Vanderlyn leads a group of students ranging in ages from college age to retirees through the ruins at the sites where the biblical stories occurred. Now, you're going to hear Mr. Vanderlyn preach as well as teach. In particular, he's going to emphasize Paul and Silas as being the message.
Now, we're seated here in front of an imperial temple. The imperial message is also here. This says, Caesar is Lord and God. And he has a system, a message, which not only comes in words, but his citizens also live out that message. And when the two messages, the message that Paul brings, the gospel that Jesus is king, meets the message that Caesar is Lord, we can expect some kind of conflict because they both claim to be the message. Let me turn to Luke's account and listen to the story. When the owners of the slave girl, the one from whom Paul had driven out the demon, who was predicting the future by the power of that Pythia spirit, realized their hope of making money was gone, they seized Paul and Silas and dragged them into the agora. And I'd like to suggest your mind ought to see Paul being dragged into here along with his friend Silas. Paul and Silas were dragged into the agora to face the authorities. They brought them before the judges. Now, the assumption would be the judges would stand on the bema, that raised platform, which is pretty well broken down over here. But imagine a dramatic-looking place, and the judges are there, and Paul and Silas are assembled in front of them. The crowd joined in the attack against Paul and Silas, and the magistrates ordered them to be stripped and beaten. After they had been severely flogged, they were thrown into prison, and the jailer was commanded to guard them carefully. Now, a couple of thoughts. This is a colony. This is Imperial Rome. Paul's a Roman citizen. You can't do that to a Roman, even a Jewish Roman. The penalties are severe for that kind of mistreatment of a Roman. Which means they didn't know Paul was a Roman. He could have put a stop to this at any moment by saying, just a minute, look in my bag. I've got my diptych. I've got the evidence of my citizenship right there. Leave me alone. And at very least would have had to have a legal trial. For some reason, Paul prefers to remain a Jew, a citizen of heaven, for some reason. Now, in the Roman practice, the magistrate would have two assistants called lictors. And the lictors carried a bundle of rods, about this high, broomstick size. And they carried that was a symbol of their authority. And when there was an incident and somebody was judged by the magistrate to be guilty, they were beaten on the spot. Right now, right here. And so apparently the magistrate said, lictors, grab them, strip them down so their back is exposed, and lash them. And they were severely flogged, in spite of Paul, at least, being a Roman. And then sent to jail. Now, typically, prison is not a sentence in the Roman world. Prison is a holding place until another sentence can be carried out, whether slavery or crucifixion or whatever your sentence is. So apparently they're being held in prison just in case. Upon receiving such orders, he, the jailer, put them in the inner cell and fastened their feet in stocks. Now, we all know what stocks are, I think, but the Romans used stocks as torture as well. And it is very possible, if not probable, that what they did was to put Paul and Silas's feet in the stocks and then to stretch them apart just to the point of the legs being pulled out of joint. So they're probably in a pretty painful, awful position in the inner part of that prison. When you become Jesus' message and begin to critique the other kingdoms of this world, don't expect them to treat you nicely. I would suggest if you truly are the message, you may attract the poor, the weak, the marginalized, the Rahabs, the Ruths, and those folks who left Egypt with the Israelites. But don't expect those to whom the system brings benefits to necessarily be all that happy. Now, I hope and pray none of us end up in those kind of stocks, but I do think being the message comes with a price. Because Jesus paid a very high price for being the message. And you know what? I think Paul and Silas were willing to do it anyway. Listen, about midnight, Paul and Silas were praying, singing hymns to God, and the other prisoners were listening. They're even being the message in jail, in maybe a very painful position. Now, a thought or two. First of all, in Hebrew, to pray isn't our Father who art in heaven only. You say, I go to church to worship. A Jew says, I go to synagogue to pray. They're worshiping. They may have been reciting Bible passages. They may have been actually praying. They were obviously singing hymns because it says that. They're holding a worship service. The other prisoners, guess what? They get to experience the message. Not only hear the message, they even choose to be the message while they're suffering. But I'd like to remind you of something. Paul's a Jew. So about midnight, they began worshiping. Now, I pictured Paul sitting there, stretched out, beaten to a pulp, bruises and blood. He's been flogged severely by the rods of the lictors, and saying, oh man, Silas, I can't sleep. Let's sing something. You got a number? And they break into How Great Thou Art, or some such praising God hymn. But I'd like to suggest it may be a little different than that. You ready? Though the wicked bind me with ropes, at midnight I will rise to sing the praises and thanksgiving to you for your Torah. I think Paul said, man, this is lousy. But the text says, at midnight. So Silas, if I happen to fall asleep, you wake me up because I want to be a man of the book. I will not sell out the mission under any cost whatsoever. I'm not so sure that about midnight is just a trivial detail. It seems to me it's probably far enough away from actual midnight that the way Luke gets us there is to say about midnight. And so here are Paul and Silas, not pleading with God to set them free, simply, but actually worshiping God for the privilege of being the message. Wonder how many prisoners ended up in Lydia's household community of faith because they experienced, knew, remember? They knew God personally in Paul. Suddenly, oh, I love it when that word shows up. That generally means God shows up. I don't think Paul expected it, and guaranteed the other prisoners didn't. But God showed up. Suddenly, there was such a violent earthquake that the foundations of the prison were shaken. At once, all the prison doors flew open, and everybody's chains came loose. Earthquakes generally announce a dramatic entrance of God in an unusual way. The earthquake at Sinai. The earthquake at the moment of Jesus' death and the moment of Jesus' resurrection, and while the disciples were praying in Jerusalem. And God says, I'm in this too. And the effect? He set the prisoners free. But they don't all run, those prisoners. The jailer woke up, and when he saw the prison doors open, he drew his sword and was about to kill himself because he thought the prisoners had escaped. But Paul shouted, don't hurt yourself! We're all here! Some suggest the reason he wanted to kill himself was he could be tortured and crucified for prisoners escaping. That's possible. I think there's another reason. I think the man is more honorable than that. He's probably a Roman soldier. In the Roman practice, if you die honorably after having committed an offense like that, suicidally, your family retains your property. That's why Cassius and Brutus commit suicide over here when they fight Octavian. Because if you die honorably, even if you die, in a sense, as an enemy, your family is protected. And I wonder if that jailer was a noble enough man to say, my last act will be to protect my family. I don't know, but I think that's possible, if not probable. But the prisoners didn't run. Why? Now maybe you can say, well, God held them there. Or Paul held them there. But there are other situations where Paul flees. Over a city wall one time, even. Why does he stay? I think he wants to be the message. And it makes me wonder whether some of those other prisoners had bought in and decided for the sake of the jailer's life to stay. Wouldn't that be the effect of being the message? Wouldn't that be just like Jesus, to hang around and even face possible suffering to protect someone else?
and moved by Mr. Vanderlaan's lesson, challenging us to be the message, despite whatever circumstances, just as Paul and Silas chose to be the message in their dire circumstances. Now, I urge you to consider this as your takeaway this morning, if you so choose, and you will, hopefully you will be blessed. However, I think that he overlooked or at least minimized the most significant part of the story, and that is the earthquake. I think we may be guilty of overlooking it too when we read this story. Ho-hum, just an earthquake. I suggest that an earthquake is not just an everyday event like a thunderstorm that can be dismissed as a simple plot point in this story. I ask you, has anyone here ever been in an earthquake? Just raise your hand. You're from California, Barbara. I could expect that. More than one, yeah. Well, I haven't. So what I had to do was go onto YouTube. And if we can get this to work, I don't know. I came up here yesterday and couldn't get it to work, but maybe the wizards back there can get this video playing. And these are YouTube videos of
more problems for earthquake. A
earthquake.
Yep,
we're having an earthquake.
I apologize for the music. This is YouTube videos, after all. So hopefully you can turn it down, the music, the sound down a little bit. One thing you're going to learn when you watch this video is that you don't want to be on a motorcycle. You can see three of them down there, right there. Coffee break time. This white stuff, I guess, is ceiling parts coming down or something in front of the camera. No, not that one. Not that one. Uh-oh. Now look what you did. This guy had to get the last thing on his wife's shopping list. I want you to look how this crowd gets thrown around. They're running one way and they get thrown back the other way.
To have stopped.
Yep.
We're gonna jump right.
I don't know why she gives him the thumbs up there. He's such a brave hero. The account in Acts indicates that the earthquake that Paul and Silas experienced in prison was not just a mere earth tremor. It says the earthquake was so violent that the foundations of the prison were shaken. Therefore, I believe the jailer, the other prisoners, and Paul and Silas were terrified to the point that their lives were changed irrevocably. Mr. Vanderlaan generously suggests the jailer's initial gesture to draw his sword to commit suicide was based on his concern to preserve his wealth to care for his family. Now, that is very kind, but at this point, the jailer probably did not even know that his family was alive and survived the earthquake. Further, Mr. Vanderlaan suggests that the prisoners did not flee because of their concern for the life and the welfare of the jailer. Once again, I think this is wish projection, or else the Roman prisoners that were there that night were much more noble than modern-day criminals. I offer that the prisoners remained for the same reason that the jailer rushed to Paul and Silas and asked them, what must he do to be saved? That reason is that he was scared of the God that Paul and Silas had been worshiping. It is inconceivable to me that the jailer miraculously acquired a knowledge of Judeo-Christian theology and felt the need to get to heaven when he died at that moment. Most probably when the jailer arrived at work that day, he had never even heard of the God of the Jews. Instead, his culture had taught him that the God responsible for earthquakes in that part of the world was Poseidon, the Greek god of the ocean, also known as Earthshaker. Poseidon carried a three-tipped spear known as a trident. When Poseidon became angry at man, he would throw his trident, and when it stuck in the earth, that's what shook the ground. The jailer probably did not understand, nor did the other prisoners understand the Hebrew prayers and hymns that Paul and Silas were uttering. They probably thought that the strange utterances that they were singing and saying were calling forth the powerful demonstration of God's power. The prisoners were frozen in place in terror. However, the jailer was obviously grateful and curious. Now, I find the rest of the jailer's story interesting because of the catastrophe of the earthquake. Still, the jailer saw fit to invite Paul and Silas to his home, where he tended to their wounds and fed them, all the while learning enough about God to develop a belief in that God, because he expresses that. He says, I believe in God. Once again, Greek wives seem to be much more gracious and understanding than most modern wives. What were you thinking? It's in the middle of the night and the house is a wreck, literally. I would suggest that Paul was also a changed man as well. Mr. Vanderlaan perceptively raised the question as to why Paul submitted himself to public flogging and imprisonment without a proper trial. That's a great question. For those of you who play card games or dominoes, you know what a trump card is and the power it has. Now, Lois Oden is a candidate to be one of our interesting people doing interesting things on a future Sunday night. She is a life master in bridge. As such, she is an expert in recognizing the high trump card and knowing how and when to play it to maximum effect. I asked Loden about this in preparation for this lesson, and she provided me with a 2-page printout describing the significance of being a life master in bridge. Lois, I'm going to leave it to you to share that information with everybody on that future Sunday night. For now, it will suffice to warn those who want to play cards with Lois that, and you care about winning, that you want to sit across the table from her and not on her side. I bring this up because a night in prison has suddenly made Paul aware that he is holding the high trump card. Having submitted to a public flogging the day before, he now insists that the same magistrates responsible for that to escort him from the prison. What changed? Did Paul dream up this legal strategy while in the stocks, or did he discover the power of God in an earthquake, a power greater than that of even Imperial Rome? I think it's interesting to realize that this is the first imprisonment of Paul for which we have any record. We seem to think that Paul was a jailbird because he was in jail so much. But in fact, this is the first time we have any record of him being put in prison. Now, he had been threatened to the point of having to be let down from the wall in Jerusalem, as Mr. Vanderlaan said, and he was even stoned and run out of town on one occasion. But he had never been beaten and put in prison before. Paul did not forget the lesson of his Philippian imprisonment, because 5 years later, when he is arrested by Roman troops in the midst of a Jewish riot at the temple in Jerusalem, Paul immediately discloses his status as a Roman citizen and then continues to utilize that trump card all the way to getting a hearing before Caesar himself in Rome. Experiencing the power of God in such a dramatic fashion in Philippi gave Paul courage to use his Roman citizenship so flamboyantly in this story, but it also gave him a message that he shared with the Philippians later in his epistle to them. It was a message where they were in a unique position to understand. I encourage you to reread the Philippian epistle with the story of Paul in the prison there. I want to read now what he wrote to the Philippians. Now, I want you to know, brothers and sisters, that what has happened to me has actually served to advance the gospel. As a result, it has become clear throughout the whole palace guard and to everyone else that I am in chains for Christ. And because of my chains, most of the brothers and sisters have become confident in the Lord and dare all the more to proclaim the gospel without fear. So Paul grew in confidence and courage to the point that he dared to stand up to the power of the Roman Empire when God shook his world. An earthquake is a powerful and often destructive force. It's not a good thing. Yet when God shook his world, the jailer did not blame God. Rather, he claimed God as a result. In fact, God shook the world in the middle of the night in Philippi 2,000 years ago, and two men, Paul and the jailer, claimed God in life-changing ways. Accordingly, they serve as examples and a message for us today. We live in a place where the earth shifts. It doesn't shake. Still, God shakes our world in other ways. Perhaps you've lost your job. Perhaps your marriage is in shambles. Perhaps your spouse, child, or another close family member has died. You fail a test or flunk a course. You have a stroke and cannot do your job anymore. These are all bad things that can shake your world. Now, it may seem blasphemous to think God is responsible for such and therefore to blame him. But we can learn a lesson from the Philippian jailer and Paul and recognize the power of God and courageously dare to claim him as our God even in the midst of shaky circumstances. At this time, if God has shaken your world, you're broken and would like to have the prayers of this church, please come forward as we stand and sing.
I've sung this song a lot of times, not always so engaged. And now Paul and Silas singing hymns in prison at midnight gives it a whole new perspective. I will call upon the Lord, who is worthy to be praised.